from Redeemer Broadcasting. This is Holding All Things Together for this final weekend in February. I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter. In China, Pastor Ezra Jin was one of 27 leaders of Zion Church who were arrested by Chinese authorities during a crackdown on the Christian church last year. Several of the church leaders have been released, but 18 remain in Chinese prisons. Pastor Jin remains in prison, and his daughter, Grace Jin Drexel, says she just wants her father back and is hopeful President Donald Trump might be able to help. Trump is scheduled to meet with Chinese leader Xi Jinping in April, and Drexel says she is really hoping that he will mention some of these cases to Xi Jinping directly. Here to talk about this religious rights violation by the Chinese Communist Party is Virginia Allen, senior news producer for The Daily Signal.
So I was really privileged recently to have a conversation with a woman who's about my age. She's 31 years old. Her name is Grace Jin Drexel, and her father, Pastor Ezra Jin, is imprisoned in China for his faith. He pastored a large church in China called Zion Church, and he did so for many years with the knowledge of the Chinese government. And then last year, in what Grace describes as a crackdown on the church, he was arrested and along with a number of other Chinese leaders and put in prison.
Also ahead, Pastor Bill Shisko discusses the 10th commandment, "You shall not covet." Covetousness is a form of idolatry. Pastor Shisko discusses how to counteract our tendency toward this sin. Later in the program, writer Jerry Wiss notes that March 5th is the birthday of Robert Louis Dabney. R.L. Dabney was an American Christian theologian, a farmer, a pastor, an army chaplain, an architect, a revered seminary professor, and a prolific man of letters. He was among America's greatest Christian scholars, yet also a man of action, and his work in recent years has enjoyed a resurgence of interest. Finally, we'll take another look at this week in history. Thanks for joining us.
Well, this week we finish going through the form of sound doctrine that is called the Ten Commandments. And the commandments, incidentally, teach us the fallacy of "I did it my way." You want to get in trouble, just try to do it your way. Well, what's the Tenth Commandment? The Tenth Commandment is "You shall not covet," and there's a list of things. And that requires not only full contentment with your own condition, but I love the language of the catechism, a right and charitable frame of spirit toward our neighbor and all that is his. Do you realize that covetousness is idolatry? Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5 brings us back to the first commandment, right? Why is covetousness idolatry? Well, if your standard of what you ought to have is what your neighbor has, then your neighbor really becomes your standard of what is right, or may I put it this way, your God. If I have the house my neighbor has, if I have a car my neighbor has, if I have the children my neighbor has, well, then I'm blessed. And you see how your neighbor becomes your God. We're called to put off covetousness, but how do you do that? How do you counteract the effect of any sin, not just by putting it off, but by putting on positive things? Number one, be thankful for what others have. When your neighbor gets something new and shows it to you, then thank him. Thank the Lord that the Lord provided that for him. And also praise him and encourage him with that. Don't think first of the fact that you want it. But more than that, thankfulness is great. Generosity, folks. See, generosity is the main means, it's a superior passion, it's a main means by which you fight against, well, being being scroungy about things and being an Ebenezer Scrooge about things. And so be wisely generous to counteract covetousness. Give to him who asks, but give it wisely, to the genuinely needy and to the genuinely worthy. Why? You not only reflect the generosity of God, but you reflect the gospel. The gospel is Jesus, though he was rich, became poor, that you through his poverty might become rich. May that be your model in generosity, and that will be the best way for you to fight off the sin of covetousness.
On the phone line with us today is Virginia Allen. And Virginia, it's been a little while since we talked with you. She works at the Daily Signal. Welcome.
It's great to be back with you, Dan. Thank you for having me today.
Now, you're a senior news producer, and you wrote an article that caught our eye titled, "Daughter Pleads for Father's Release from Chinese Prison." Mm-hmm. It's under your international news. Can you tell us a little bit about this story, please?
Absolutely. Well, you know, we've all likely heard about the persecution of Christians in China, but it's different when you hear numbers and that it's happening versus you start to see people's faces and you hear their personal stories. So I was really privileged recently to have a conversation with a woman who's about my age. She's 31 years old. Her name is Grace Jin Drexel, and her father, Pastor Ezra Jin, is imprisoned in China for his faith. He pastored a large church in China called Zion Church, and he did so for many years with the knowledge of the Chinese government. And then last year, in what Grace describes as a crackdown on the church, that he was arrested and along with a number of other Chinese leaders and put in prison. And she lives, Grace, his daughter, lives here in America and has been using any tools that she has. She lives in Maryland, pretty close to D.C., and so has been coming into D.C., talking to lawmakers, and advocating for her father's release.
Now, when he's in prison, there's other people also captured that are in prison with him?
That's right. Yeah, so in the initial arrest, there were 27 leaders from Zion Church who were arrested by Chinese authorities. This was back in October. And a number of them have been released, but 18 still remain in prison. And, you know, I was interested, again, because we have heard over the years a lot about the oppression of China against Christians. But you know, I was interested to hear from Grace that it really seems like there are times and moments when the Chinese Communist Party allows the church to kind of continue and grow, and then all of a sudden it'll just be like they decide, nope, we're going to crack down. We're going to really strategically launch an effort against
Christians.
It is. Yeah, because it's the way Grace described it is she said, you know, it seemed like they just felt like our community had gotten too large and now was posing a threat to the CCP. And even though, obviously, you know, they had existed for many, many years, and again, were doing so with the knowledge of the Chinese government. They weren't trying to hide what they were doing. As Grace described it, you know, we never took a political stance. We just wanted to make the message of Jesus Christ, gospel, available.
Sure.
Yeah.
And he really worked at his faith, too. I was reading your article, and it said that he came here to the United States for a time to earn his doctorate. Then he returned to China and in this Zion Church. So my hat is off to this man. He was really serving the Lord.
He was. He was trying to do it the right way, getting that great foundation in Scripture and in biblical teaching. And so he did. He moved to the U.S. for a time to go to seminary and then moved back to China. And he actually, for I believe about a decade, he operated within the formal church, kind of the state sanctioned right. Christian church of China. But it was this really feeling that he had that, okay, this isn't really true, authentic Christianity. Grace told me it was like every single thing has to be approved essentially right. by the CCP as a state-sanctioned church. And, you know, the pastor just decided, Pastor Ezra Zinn just decided, you know, this isn't really a real church when we yeah. have to essentially place the CCP as God. And we don't have the freedom to just freely worship and speak the truth. And that's when he decided to separate and start Zion Church.
Yeah, so this Zion Church, it sounds like it really grew. There was like, 100 church plants across the nation?
That's right. And they had sort of an interesting model operating. They were first really solely based in Beijing, and they were in Beijing pretty exclusively mm-hmm. for a long time. And then it was in 2018 that the Chinese Communist Party officially shut them down. Hmm. But instead of closing, they just kind of moved out to a little bit more rural areas, still had somewhat of a presence in Beijing, but then also started meeting some online. So they were a little bit of a hybrid model where I think some locations were meeting in person, some more so online, sure. and really trying to be strategic about how do we continue fostering community and Christian fellowship while not drawing too much attention from the Chinese government, but also being open and honest about who we are and what we're doing and not hiding anything.
And this church, you write, it says, reaches about 10,000 people weekly and continues to meet even with its leaders in prison. Well, they're not giving up, I guess.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible to hear just that resilience
yeah.
and the fact that you know they're continuing to, in knowing that there is risk, obviously, in continuing to meet and to worship. And, you know, I asked Grace that question. I said, you know, is this just a reality that most Christians have in China, that at any time they could be arrested? And she said, yeah, you know, growing up, this is something that I've always been aware of, that this could happen to my dad, that he could be arrested and put in prison for the work he does as a pastor. But it's obviously obviously quite different when it really becomes the reality, and hence why she's doing everything she can, of course, to get her father out of prison.
Yeah. Your article includes a picture of this man standing there at his pulpit, holding a microphone, and he's a beautiful man. He's very clean cut and just a nice looking fella. And it's so sad to think that he's in prison, and that's really rough on a man's health as he gets a little bit older.
Yeah, Grace expressed concern for her dad and his health. She said he's always had pretty poor health. He's in his 50s, and mm-hmm. so she's concerned about the kind of medical care he's receiving. She knows that he's not receiving his specific prescription drugs while he's in prison.
Oh, dear.
He has very little information, of course, consistently about his health, but all she knows is that, you know, he is struggling, and her request, her plea is simply that, you know, the Chinese Communist Party will release him and allow him to come to America.
Yeah.
And apparently he has expressed a willingness that if he is released, he will move to the United States.
Yes.
So there's really no reason, of course, for China to continue to hold him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the daughter is in the States, and the dad is in prison in China then.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the biggest ask, really, that that Grace Drexel has is when President Trump meets with Xi Jinping in April, Xi Jinping, of course, being the president of China,
sure.
that Trump will voice these concerns over the persecuted church in China and
yeah.
might even specifically mention Pastor Ezra Zinn to Xi Jinping and ask for his release and the release of the other, not only 18 remaining individuals who are in leadership for Zion Church release, but also for so many other Christians across China who have been imprisoned for their faith.
Yeah. I've been impressed with our president's interest in protecting the Christian faith, and I'm just thankful for that. Now, this isn't the reason we called, but I also know that there's some great interest in Nigeria and what's going on there. We've got maybe 2 minutes left. Do you want to mention anything regarding that?
Yeah, we've seen major developments in recent weeks. The U.S. has pledged to send 200 troops to Nigeria. Mm. These are specifically troops that are going to train the Nigerian forces and to provide them with resources, with equipment so that they can address the threat that radical Islamic terrorism presents not only to Christians, but really to Nigeria as a whole. We've seen radical Islamic terror groups such as Boko Haram launch attacks, and not just on Christians, but on Muslims who are willing to live peacefully alongside Christians. So there is obviously interest on the part of, like you said, President Trump, who's a huge advocate for freedom of religion, and increasingly for the Nigerian government to, of course, create stability within their own borders.
Yeah. Well, I just thank God for that. If someone wants to read more of your writings, today we're talking with Virginia Allen, a senior news producer for the Daily Signal. Where do they go to read more?
You can find all of my work and the work of my fantastic colleagues at dailysignal.com. And if you like to get your news via email, make it nice and easy, you can go to our website, dailysignal.com, and hit that subscribe button at the top of the page, and you will receive about 5 or 6 top stories of the day every morning to your inbox to keep you informed on the news and really the news also that conservatives care about. If you like social media, we're across all social media platforms and on YouTube. We have over 1 million subscribers on YouTube, so you can join a thriving community that loves getting their news in that format there.
Sometimes we talk to your colleague, Tyler O'Neill, and we really enjoy talking with him.
So he does excellent work.
If you see him today, tell him we said hi.
I will indeed.
Okay. God bless you, Virginia. And thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Dan.
March 5th marks the birthday of Robert Louis Dabney. R.L. Dabney was an American Christian theologian, a farmer, a pastor, an army chaplain, an architect, a revered seminary professor, and a prolific man of letters. His work in recent years has enjoyed a resurgence of interest. Today, Jerry West reminds us that Dabney was one of America's greatest Christian scholars and a man of action. Jerry is a frequent contributor to Holding All Things Together and is a writer for Christian Renewal magazine.
March 5th marks the birth date of Robert Louis Dabney, one of America's foremost theologians, church influencers, and Christian social commentators. You may not have heard of Dabney. That's because he was born and died in the 19th century. Well, then, what does he have to say to us today? Christian truth and theology are timeless, of course, and Dabney was a thorough and prolific expositor of biblical truth. That's never dated. He also showed how to engage with then-current topics and questions from a biblical perspective. Dabney wrote one of the few systematic theologies in his generation and was a professor at Union Theological Seminary in Virginia, which saw an uptick in the number of students studying for the ministry while he was there. His energies and abilities did not go unnoticed outside his native Virginia. He was asked by his colleague in Philadelphia, Charles Hodge, to join the faculty of Princeton Theological Seminary, the most renowned institution for the training of ministers of the gospel at the time, but he refused. He was also asked to consider the pulpit and ministry at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City, among the most well-known churches at the time, but likewise said no. Dabney remained faithful to his region, his church, and the seminary that helped educate him that he now served. He sought not fame or national influence, but godly pastoral development of the men under his charge. Dabney was first and foremost a churchman, serving as pastor, then seminary professor, both before and after the Civil War. Later in life, he moved to Texas to teach moral philosophy and political economy at the university in Austin. As a Southerner of his time, Dabney believed in the legitimacy of slavery. As the apostle in his time, Dabney operated within the accepted civil laws of his time and place. His position on this matter should not disqualify him from our acknowledging his value as a Christian theologian. During the war, he sent a missive to Jefferson Davis recommending that the South develop a plan for the gradual elimination of slavery and propose it to the Union, though the letter never reached the Confederate president. What makes Dabney memorable, and apparently many agree since virtually all of his writings are now available online as well as still in print, is not only his biblical and theological prowess, but the deployment of it in his life and work. It seemed there wasn't a topic he could not address, seeking as he did direction from the scriptures. In addition to being a precise theologian, he was a man of action. Like Abraham Kuyper, Dabney was a Christian Renaissance man, operating in multiple spheres, as Kuyper had done, with the exception of holding political office. He was a planter, quarryman, teacher, pastor, architect, theologian and seminary professor, writer, army chaplain, soldier, and husband and father. His father died in his youth. Later, he lost two of his children to disease. He was a Virginian, and like many of his countrymen, suffered economically and, one can imagine, psychologically at the Confederate defeat, which wiped out much of his beloved state, since it was the front line during much of the war. He was a man acquainted with grief and loss. Yet these proved to steel rather than to shrink him. There were never more students at Union Seminary than there were after the war. Dabney continued to write into his later years, including a defense of Virginia and the South, but also a biography of Stonewall Jackson, now considered a 19th century classic. Dabney served under Jackson as chaplain and later as a major who saw action, leading at least one charge during the war. His multi-volume discussions, still in print, cover both theological and secular topics, from the Christian's love of enemies to an examination of 19th century German theology and its influence, from Supreme Court decisions to patriotism and church union, and from science and education to civil ethics and labor unions. Dabney was a biblical expositor and analyst, but also a polemicist, something not especially appreciated today. His positions nonetheless ring true in an era of waffling, compromise, and fear of man. We gain much from reading him today.
Time once again for This Week in History. February 23rd, 1954. Children at Arsenal Elementary School in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, are the first to receive injections of the new polio vaccine developed by Dr. Jonas Salk. Funded by the March of Dimes, Salk discovered there were 125 strains of three basic types of polio. Polio infections dropped from 14,647 in 1955 to 5,894 in 1956, thanks in large part to Salk's vaccine. While now nearly eradicated in the U.S., as late as 2010, there were still 250,000 cases per year globally. And February 26, 1993. A bomb placed by radical Muslims explodes at 12:18 p.m. in the parking garage of the World Trade Center, killing six and injuring more than 1,000. Captured in 1995, mastermind Ramzi Ahmed Youssef told the Secret Service his only regret was that the 110-story tower did not fall into its twin and kill thousands as planned. As we all know, Al-Qaeda terrorists succeeded in 2011 where Youssef had failed, bringing down the towers and killing thousands. That was This Week in History. events as we recorded them, as God ordained them.
That's our program for this week. Thanks for joining us. Holding All Things Together is a production of Redeemer Broadcasting, and the views expressed are those of the participants. If you'd like to help us continue to produce this program and distribute it to others, please consider supporting us. Our mailing address for your tax-deductible gift is Redeemer Broadcasting, P.O. Box 1520, Olive Bridge, New York, 12461. You may also email us at ministry@redeemerbroadcasting.org. For Holding All Things Together, I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter.
God willing, see you next week.